Fallout Equestria, Chapter 22, The Earthpony Way. I pray for the safety of all good ponies who come to Philadelphia, even slaves, but we can't expect the goddess to do all the work. Industry. Spike had said he didn't understand the Earthpony Way until he had seen Philadelphia. Even now, with the ruins of the city looming on the edge of the horizon, I began to understand why. Industry had been the secret heart of Equestria since long before the war. How could you have pony-pulled trains without steel mills creating metal for the rails? How could you have the tall skyscrapers of Manhattan without glass companies producing windows by the hundreds? How could a small town like Ponyville have a dressmaker's shop with all the finest fabrics without the textiles industry? Still, most ponies had barely thought about it. Out of sight, out of mind. Living in the idyllic, pastoral towns and halcyon cities of Equestria, it had been easy to forget. Unless you were a pony living in Equestria's single center of manufacturing. A mecca of Earth pony industry. Philadelphia. I learned these things from Steelhoofs. I had sought his knowledge when it became abundantly clear that we were heading towards something far more than just a really big version of old Appaloosa. Because less than halfway between Manhattan and Philadelphia, my pip bucket started picking up a broadcast out of Philadelphia. It was the same musical programming the sprite bots kept playing, interrupted occasionally for messages from Red Eye. But now that I had a constant feed, I realized those little speeches were far more frequent and carried more substance than I had assumed. Now, Red Eye was able to talk to me as he did the ponies of Philadelphia. And his words worried me. A lot.
We have Uncle and Aunt Fruitcup, a peaceful and loving couple, married for nearly a decade now, living in their quaint little house with their tiny garden on the outskirts of Romer. No children, two dogs and a sunflower that Aunt Fruitcup has named Celestia. What kind of monster, I have been asked, would root up Aunt and Uncle Fruitcup, tear them away from their peaceful, pointless lives, and set them to work hauling carts heavy with scrap metal? A monster indeed, but one with his eyes open and cast upon our future, the future of Equestria. 200 years ago we lost our great nation, but we will have it again. And what would the Fruitcups and their little homestead be in 200 years? Nothing. Meaningless. Not even hoof notes in the annals of history. But what will have meaning 200 years from now? This factory. And it is from this factory and the others like it that Equestria will be rebuilt. It is from the work that Uncle and Aunt Fruitcup do now that a new national infrastructure will be created and a new golden age will be born. The golden age of unity. Equestria will rise like a phoenix from her own ashes, but not without our help, and not without our labor. This is what is important. This will make a difference. This will last.
The words of Red Eye were met with the clopping applause of at least 100 hoofs. The roar of the crowd was abruptly cut off, replaced by a gravely voice.
And there you have it, Red Eye's speech marking the reopening ceremony of the Honest Steel Factory. Word has it, Red Eye will be making a return visit later this week to inspect the factory's output. And now for some music, starting with my favorite, March of the Parasprites.
The broadcast began playing the familiar marching music, heavy on tuba and harmonica. I turned off the station, pulling out my earbloom. Red Eye, it would seem, didn't live in Philadelphia. But he made visits, and one was coming up very soon. I informed my companions of this. Velvet Remedy was curled up on one of the bench seats of the Sky Bandit, with Pyrolite sleeping next to her, a glowing patch of emerald and gold against her charcoal coat. I was amazed at how the Balefire Phoenix had stayed with her. Normally, even a pet bird would need a cage. Steelhoofs nodded, not turning towards me. He had been keeping watch on the ground, sweeping below ever since we had flown over the last rubble of the Manhattan suburbs. I tried to avoid doing that.
I have bad news, folks, Calamity called
from in front of the Sky Bandit.
She's starting to sag. Keep your peepers out for some place to put her down long enough to swap the spark batteries.
All I've got is dirt, rocks, and dead trees.
Steelhoofs called back.
Nothing you want to land on out here.
I floated out the binoculars and moved to the edge of one of the windows, braving the possible vertigo.
What are we looking for?
Steelhoofs continued to scan the ground below.
Any place the hellhounds are less likely to get at us.
Hellhounds. I recalled Omash as DJ Pawn 3 warning ponies about hellhounds in the stretch between Manhattan and Philadelphia. I'd been picturing rabid dogs like the ones Uncle and Aunt Fruitcup had, only vicious. Possibly overgrown and mutated like the Bloodwings. Sure, the first time I heard of a hellhound, I learned that just one could take out a wagon train of slavers. But then, so could I. And I was hardly frightening. Steelhoof's even voice, however, betrayed a hint of worry. And nothing my mind had been conjuring would even strike alarm in the ancient, steel-clad soldier.
What are hellhounds?
I caught a shiver pass through Pyrolite. I suspected the answer would be something much worse than I dismissed them to be. When even the nigh-immortal bird is worried. The suspicion was nailed home when Steelhoofs and Calamity both turned to look at me as if I had just asked what a gun was.
You don't know what a hellhound is?
Steelhoofs asked evenly.
And you decided we should all go to Philadelphia anyway, without finding out what lies between.
Velvet Remedy chimed in.
I've never even heard of a hellhound.
Steelhoofs face-hoofed with a clank of metal on metal. Calamity muttered something about stable folk from ahead.
You could fill us in, Velvet Remedy suggested. Or you two can just keep being melodramatic.
Steelhoofs bristled.
The hellhounds,
he nickered,
are simply the most dangerous creatures in the equestrian wasteland. I'd rather face off against alicorns.
Velvet Remedy and I exchanged looks. She deadpanned.
Wow, informative. What, are these things a secret?
I smirked. Calamity pushed back his head, glancing over his left wing at us.
Either of your folks ever heard about Splendid Valley?
My yes came simultaneously with Velvet Remedy's no. While hellhounds had not struck much of a note in my imagination, a terrifying specter of Splendid Valley had been painted in my mind by all the dark rumors and foreboding mentions of the place. I looked down over the ruined plains below us, all brown dirt and blackened trees. It didn't look like the barren landscape in the picture in Twilight's Asinium, but that had been before the end of the world. It could be...
Is that what's between Manhattan and Philadelphia? Splendid Valley? Are we over it right now?
I scanned for what could be Merry Pony. A structure in the distance caught my eye. A large building topped with smokestacks. It looked fairly intact. Giant metal skeletons fanned out from the building in all directions, holding up lines of cable. Calamity barked a laugh.
Oh, hell no! Splendid Valley is closer to Ponyville than to Philadelphia.
I was suddenly thankful for the slavers who captured me my first night out of the stable. Without them, what pony could say the direction I would have struck off in?
But what all do you know about Splendid Valley?
Well, that's where Merry Pony is.
I started, trying to remember everything I had heard, all while wondering where Calamity was leading with this. Steelhoofs was silent, which could mean he thought that Calamity was talking the right tack. Or just that Steelhoofs was Steelhoofs.
Merry Pony used to be there because of all the gemstones they mined out of Splendid Valley, but it was converted to something else once the gems were all gone.
I licked my lips, trying to think of more.
They stored all sorts of magical toxins in the caverns under Splendid Valley. And it was the second place hit by a megaspell.
Second place, huh? Calamity whinnied. I didn't know that.
You're missing the most important thing,
Steelhoofs interrupted. More important than megaspells, radiation and magical toxins? I looked from Calamity to Steelhoofs.
Oh, yep. When the ponies decided to mine Splendid Valley, they had one small problem. The valley was inhabited.
Velvet Remedy's eyes widened.
Wait. They mined ponies' homes?
Not ponies,
Steelhoofs answered, interjecting.
Gemstones meant medical energy weapons, crucial for the war effort. It was decided that the creatures living in Splendid Valley had to move. The valley belonged to the nation of Equestria and it was needed.
I felt a rock growing in my stomach.
Only not all of the inhabitants seemed to get the message, and after ponies had stripped the place clean, several families moved back into those caverns.
Back in? To where the Ministry of Arcane Sciences was storing hazardous medical waste?
And to where the zebras set off a balefire bomb.
Steelhoofs added.
Goddesses, Velvet Remedy gasped. And they survived? Those poor, what were they again?
Diamond dogs.
Calamity called back. I froze.
Wait. Hold on. Are you telling us that the creatures that Rarity defeated by whining have become the most terrifying creatures in the Equestrian Wasteland?
Yep.
I looked to Steelhoofs in disbelief, but his helmet nodded.
They're big, they're fast, and they're extremely aggressive. They have claws that can tear through armor like it was soft cloth. I've even seen one claw their way through an Alicorn's medical shield.
Fuck.
Well, makes me glad we're up here where we can shoot at them and they can't get at us.
I paused.
They can't fly, can they?
Nope,
Calamity said, much to my short-lived relief.
But they can dig, fast, and pretty much through anything. When they come after you, they can't stay underground till they're right beneath you. Ground might tremble a bit, that's all the warning you'll get. Before they rent you apart, and they sure ain't gonna stand around outside where you can shoot at them.
Worse,
Steelhoofs asserted.
They're smart. These aren't animals like manticores or bloodwings. They've got the hold of magical energy weapons, reverse engineered them, and rebuilt them for holding in their claws. They don't have the magic to create new ones, but they sliced their way into the Splendid Valley Armory and stole over 100 weapons. All of which we must assume have been repurposed.
So, Velvet Remedy said slowly, they can shoot us and we can't get at them?
Cocking her head towards me, she snarked.
Well, thank you, little Pip. I adore the places you take me.
What is this place? I asked, staring at the huge smokestacks as I stepped out of the sky bandit and onto the broken roof of the building I had spotted in the distance. All around, metal structures like the skeletons of standing giants stretched out across the plains, most marching towards Manhattan or Philadelphia. The building was huge and offered the best protection against hellhounds.
A power station,
Steelhoofs answered.
Massive furnaces burned coal to generate the power necessary to operate a lot of the non-magical conveniences that came out of Equestria's technological revolution. There were hundreds of these all over Equestria before the war.
He pointed a hoof to the cables that the metal skeletons were holding up.
Those carried the power created here to the cities.
Wow. I floated out the binoculars and gazed out along one of the marching lines of metal structures. About a mile away, several had collapsed, the lines severed and dangling from their still-standing compatriots. This was so much bigger than the once coal-powered train engines I had seen in Uapalooza and Junction R7. Calamity had detached himself from the Sky Bandit's harness and was preparing to crawl under the passenger wagon as Velvet Remedy fished spare spark batteries out of her saddle boxes. Floating my binoculars back into my saddlebags, I cast a look about the roof. On one end was a small tower with a door. My curiosity woke up and began digging into my mind with a persistent hoof. Shrugging, I trotted towards the door, pulling out my screwdriver and a bobby pin in anticipation. No reason not to just take a look. I was thrilled when the door was locked. Crouching, I got to work. Click. Such a sweet sound. I nudged the door open. Stairs up to the tower and down into the power plant itself. As I stepped into the darkness, a deep, rumbling voice asked,
"Where are you going?"
"Exploring,"
I smiled back. Steelhoofs just shook his head, but took up position behind me as I headed up the stairs. The tower stairwell opened onto a single room with a balcony that looked like it was designed for Pegasus wagon landings. The back half of the room was nothing more than a huge cargo elevator, a circular company logo painted on the elevator door, Hippocampus Energy, Hydroelectric Coal Sewage, was flanked and peeling into slow oblivion. The rest of the room had large windows looking out towards the Philadelphia and Manhattan skylines. Both were far enough away that the horizon hid them, but Philadelphia was closer and I could see the clouds on that horizon hung low. Black, angry clouds lit by reddish light from below. Philadelphia's ivory tower was clearly visible, slashing up into the clouds like a needle.
Wow, the sky over Philadelphia actually looks... kinda evil.
Red, I must have several of the factories going again,
Steelhoofs commented. I nodded, although I had no idea why that would change the cloud cover. Then again, I thought as I looked out across the power plant's massive chimneys, maybe it would. There were four boxes of ammo sitting under a bank of dead lights with labels like Generator No. 11 Output and Sector No. 7 Load. I knelt by the ammo boxes. Two were empty, the other two locked. I opened one easily enough, retrieving ammo that didn't match any firearm I had seen before. A big and frightening caliber. The other box, to my surprise, was jammed. Some pony had tried picking the lock and failed badly. It was literally the first evidence I had seen that any pony in the equestrian wasteland other than me had learned lockpicking. Unfortunately for both of us, this pony wasn't very good at it. I sat back. I had no idea how to open a force-jammed lock, aside from the sort of massive firepower that would likely destroy the contents of the armored box. The damn thing was designed so you couldn't just shoot the lock. I telekinetically lifted the box and tried to pry at it, but that was utterly futile. A pony might think that having the strength to lift a train car would give me more than enough power to tear open a box, but no. The levitation field of my telekinesis makes the objects trapped inside, like the box car in Appaloosa, virtually weightless. Until, of course, I let go. There simply wasn't enough force behind my single magical spell to break a lock. I'd have better luck with a crowbar. But I tried anyway, and failed, and tried again, and failed again, and finally tossed the box as hard as I could. It hit with a thud that did no further damage to the box but left a small crack in the plaster covering the wall.
Done now, a smooth feminine voice asked from the stairwell. Or would you like to jump on it with your hoofs for a while first?
I blushed, looking at Velvet Remedy.
How's Calamity doing?
She sighed, looking out the window at the sky banded on the roof below.
Do you think there's any chance of getting him a bath in Philadelphia?
She looked across at Steelhoofs.
I suspect an actual spa is right out.
I laughed. Good luck trying to get Calamity into a spa, even if there is one. The stairwell down led to a set of offices adjacent to a break room. While Steelhoofs and I took the offices, Velvet Remedy trotted towards the latter to scavenge any foodstuffs from what had once been the employee refrigerator. I felt confident that everything she would find would be vegetarian, no matter the actual contents. The offices had windows on opposite sides. To the back, the windows had once peered outside, but they had been so caked with dust over the centuries that the weakened sunlight that made it through the clouds above was not strong enough to penetrate. Opposite these were windows that stared out over the power plant's main floor, filled with enormous generators and a wall of furnaces. A metal catwalk bisected the air above, leading from the offices here to what looked like an Overmare's office on the far side.
How did catwalks over heavy machinery become the dominant aesthetic?
Horrifying memories of iron-shot firearms were flashing through my head. Although, fortunately, this place seemed utterly deserted. Looking around, I could see where there had been turret emplacements, but they were destroyed. Further catwalks and suspended stairwells led down to the floor of the plant, and on one was the crumbled remains of a brain bot and a few piles of mildly pink ash. Further evidence of the scavengers who had come before us. I turned back, already having decided to cross the catwalk and explore the office beyond. But not with Steelhoofs. Previous experience told me that having someone as heavy as he was on those catwalks would be four hoofs of no. Steelhoofs was looking at a framed sheet high up on the wall. A badly faded page from a newspaper stared back. I trotted over, having to plant my forehoofs on the wall to get the height to read it. The pony who hung the frame was not thinking of shorter ponies. The main article featured a picture of this power plant, or at least one that could be its identical sister. Hippocampus Energy Plant No. 12 opens amidst controversy. Pegasus and unicorn protesters decry environmental impact. The story dominated the page, pushing aside lesser stories. Philadelphia's prestigious Alpha Omega Hotel to host this year's Summer Sun celebration and coal prices continue to rise as relations with Zebra Nation remain strained. Princess Celestia promises amiable resolution soon. To make room. A thought hit me. Back in New Appaloosa, Calamity had said something.
All the coals on strange faraway lands, full of zebras.
I dropped to all hoofs, turning my head towards steel hoofs.
Hold on,
I said, feeling dumbstruck for the second time in as many hours.
Equestria didn't have any coal?
I waved a hoof at the power plant.
Are you telling me ponies built Equestria's entire infrastructure on a power source you didn't have?
Steelhoofs said nothing.
That's insane. What pony does that?
Steelhoofs just stared as I had a mental meltdown trying to pass that idea. Finally he stated,
Why would it be a problem? We had resources the zebras needed. They had coal. We trade. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, sure. Until some pony, or some zebra, figures out they don't have enough to go around anymore. Or decides they just don't want to share. I turned away, my eyes falling on a desk and the strangely pristine coffee mug still sitting on it. I allowed myself the distraction of marveling at how, in all these dusty, tattered, decaying ruins, a coffee mug would be the thing in finest condition. I glanced across at the other desks and a table beyond. Yes, there wasn't one that I wouldn't have felt safe drinking out of. Except for the one where a baby red roach had apparently decided to drown itself. I shuddered a little and decided that the coffee mug maker had employed some minor magic in their creation. A little spell meant to keep them from being stained by the coffee had left them the cleanest things in all of Equestria. Several of the mugs had the company emblem. Hippocampus Energy, Hydroelectric, Coal, Sewage. Okay, so Equestria hadn't been entirely dependent on trade with the zebras, but this power plant spoke volumes to just how much of it had been. I snorted in wary amusement. Unicorns gave us power through magic. Earth ponies had given us power through water, rocks and...
Oh, horse apples,
I said, suddenly realizing we had all left Calamity on the rooftop alone. We all galloped back, only to find Calamity still at work.
Shouldn't be more than a few minutes,
he said, half his body hidden under the sky bandit.
Why, what's got you all acting spooked?
Pyrolite was circling overhead, keeping an eye out for danger. Or food, or small, shiny things.
Nothing.
Steelhoofs started to reply, but Velvet Remedy stepped forward, levitating a rolled sheet of paper that she had slipped through the straps of her saddle boxes.
I found something I wanted you to take a look at,
Velvet almost purred.
Building and fixing things is your forte after all.
Calamity pushed himself out from under the sky bandit to take a look. Velvet Remedy cringed back slightly. He was as filthy as she had feared.
Sure, what you got for me?
Taking a few steps back from Calamity, Velvet floated the roll of paper between them, uncurling the schematic. The paper was darkly stained with blood, but most of the writing was still legible. Calamity leaned forward to study it. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw pyrolite dive down below the roofline. A moment later, there was a crackle of green flame. The majestic predator returned with a roasted squirrel in her beak. She dropped it on the roof next to Velvet Remedy and began pecking at it. I boggled internally as Velvet, who not minutes ago had edged back from a dirt and grease-smeared Calamity, only smiled at the very carnivorous actions of the Balefire Phoenix. Calamity let out a low whistle.
Well, some pony was sure. Inventive.
He looked up to Velvet Remedy.
Where'd y'all find this?
On a table, beneath the remains of a dead unicorn pony,
Velvet Remedy fretted. I could guess by the waver in her voice that the body had not been a skeleton.
Some pony more recent, one of the scavengers, I assumed. I think she may have died for that.
How did she die?
Calamity asked with an odd sense of urgency. Vivid Remedy, ever the medical pony, was swift to answer. She was hit by a magical weapon. It didn't turn her to ash, but it melted half of her face and neck, she said grimly. Calamity nodded with a frown.
Well, that rules out. About nothing.
The power plant had robotic security that wielded magical energy weapons, I informed him. I've seen the sort before. Calamity let out a sigh of relief. Pyrelight looked up from her meal, a strip of barbecued squirrel dangling from her beak.
This here's a design for creating a helmet using the claws of a hellhound. Thing is, I don't think a unicorn could use it, he told us.
I could imagine why. I had no desire to trade in my horn for such a helmet.
But it would sure make one hell of a weapon if I ever gave up shooting for headbutting.
One of the children asked me, Red Eye, what is your cutie mark?
The charismatic voice of Red Eye spoke to me in my ear bloom as I moved back down into the power plant. This time I left Steelhoofs behind with Calamity. In return, Velvet Remedy insisted on accompanying me. No splitting up.
To that child, I answered, I do not have one.
I paused, lifting a hoof to my ear bloom. I recalled with a shudder how the alicorns were blank-flanked. Was Red Eye an alicorn? He certainly didn't speak like one. I racked my brain, trying to remember if I'd ever encountered a male alicorn. I couldn't think of one.
Of course, the next question was, why Red Eye? Why don't I have a cutie mark? Because I chose not to have a cutie mark. Why would I want one? Am I really going to let a picture on my flank determine my future? If I find something that I really enjoy, do I need an icon on my ass to tell me? Of course not. To too many ponies, cutie marks are more about what you can't be. How can you expect to be a great scientist if your cutie mark is a rake? Or an amazing artist if your flank has a picture of a pile of hay? Who is going to give you the chance? But if your flank is bare, then the possibilities are endless. And the choice is up to you. That is why I had my cutie mark removed. And why the children of Unity have all chosen to do the same. In the new Equestria, we will all be lifted up by the goddess, freed from the shackles of cutie mark coercion. But there is still much work to be done before that day, so in anticipation for it, we have chosen to take the first step ourselves.
As I took my first step onto the catwalk, I shut off the broadcast. I didn't need any of that nonsense threatening my concentration if a section of the walkway started to give. Vervet, you stay here. I'm just going to go across to that office. Because that's what not splitting up means to you, right? Velvet chided. I sighed and tapped at the catwalk. Because I don't want to risk putting extra weight, I clamped up towards too late. So, you're saying I'm heavy? Velvet Remedy said with a voice like chocolate silk. Is that why you no longer seem attracted to me? And here I had thought it was because of the wagon. But no, it's because you think I'm fat. I face-offed. Velvet, I... Oh no, she said, putting an extra sway into her hips as she stepped out onto the catwalk in front of me. It's good that you finally told me. All this adventuring, I've really let myself go, haven't I? Velvet... The more mature unicorn mare tossed her mane as she turned to look at me over her shoulder, pouting alluringly. I felt a flush of arousal mixed with cringing shame. She lifted a hoof to her muzzle, sucking it in thought. I suppose I'm getting old, too. Luna's tidal mare heat. I began to follow behind her, head hung low, using my levitation to keep most of my weight off the catwalk. She tortured me the whole trip. It was the longest catwalk in history.